Then I'm going to hit the lab intro right here.
Life's a bitch!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a what I'm calling a very special episode of Life's a Binge. If you get the TV pun there, it's not really a pun, but back in the 90s when there was something crazy happening in TV, they would always call the episode a very special Blossom learns that some guys to no means yes. Tonight, a very special episode of Family Matters.
Graffiti. Wait, did Blossom really do that?
I probably.
That sounds real.
Who knows? But anywho, so yeah, it's just going to be a big open conversation about the state of the nation that we are presently living in. So it's a little different. But yeah, let's get things rolling. Oh, by the way, I'm Jared, by the way.
And I'm BJ.
I am Rich.
And I'm Matt.
And we do have people in the waiting room, so we're going to grab them in just a second. But see, when I do, BJ, I hate to break up the flow right now, but when I'm not on the big screen right now, so it's just Matt's big face.
Yeah, because when you're recording, it doesn't show you up on the screen.
So I'm curious if the recording is going to show me as the big screen, because right now I just see Rich staring into the camera.
I see you. Like, I see you and me and my little one, so.
Okay, we'll see.
Yeah, as I say, we can do it however.
As long as
the sound comes across too, and hopefully it'll switch to whoever's talking.
You can see me up in this corner at all times. Anyway, so how's everyone doing with everything that's happening?
You don't want me to go first.
Let me go first.
Yes.
I am doing this now. I'm starting piano lessons. I could play.
Does not sound familiar.
No. you probably know the honeybee. No?
Actually, anybody? Don't know that.
those are my first two pieces that I'm working on. So Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And what's cool is he's teaching me some method and some basics of stuff that I can use. And so I'm using Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, the honeybee, and C scales, which was that little dd, and so that over and over, but teaching it to go with both hands, and then you learn how to there's eight notes in the scale, so you have to know when to kind of shift your thumb over, and if you're using your left hand for the scales, you have to be able to it's weird, the timing. I know, it's fun. Yeah. And I had this moment that reminded me of piano lessons as a kid, where I was just like, boo, I hate this. But once I got past that and started to kind of embrace
I'm not good at this yet.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not awesome at this right now, and it sucks. But I got past that and actually kind of embraced some of the stuff that I'm learning, I never really learned how to read music. So I'm really practicing to the read notes and playing them. That's been a really great a distraction that I was scared. I almost ditched my first lesson because I didn't want to. I was scared. Sure. So, but anyway, that's what's up with
right
me.
What you met?
Nice. Nick's
here.
Hi, I have you. I have the mute power and control, so you might have unmuted yourself, but I'll get to you in a minute. Anyway.
Hi, Nick.
Hey. So recently, during all this time, I've been in the business of trying to learn more about computers, and I've been like rebuilding a lot of my old ancient laptops, and so I have like this late 2011 MacBook that I decided to go in and put 3 terabytes of storage in and upgrade the RAM and put in like a Bluetooth 4.0. Just like, I'm like, I haven't used this in years, so if I then who cares? And I just looked at some YouTube videos and then decided to make a really powerful, ridiculous little machine. And then I got addicted and said, wow, this like my little old chintzy MacBook that I never used is really cool now. That should probably also be like what I have for my laptop that I use all the time. That's like super powerful. So then I put some like SSD in there. And,
yeah, that's where it's at.
Got all crazy with that. And I was like, oh, my old LXPS 8100 from long ago. I'm going to, like, it doesn't work anymore. The drive is completely, like, non-functional. So now I'm going to go in there and I'm going to swap out the hard drive. And, ooh, now I'm going to put some, like, new fancy RAM in there. So I just, like, got kind of ridiculous. I've also been trying to study for this A-plus certification for computers and all that. So, I'm figuring, you know, once this whole world, like, we could get back to normal, but once the world shuts down again, IT people might be in demand. They never stop working.
This is true.
Because right now, I am in the business of live meetings, and that's not happening.
Yeah. True story.
Yeah.
True story. Right, I still work full time and raise a baby. That's what's up with me. Same old, same old, same old. Woo. Rich, what about you, man? What have you been up to?
Shit, man. What have I been doing? Rage! Rage. No. I have been talking to a lot of people. Chief amongst them, I've talked to my parents probably more in the past couple weeks than I have in general. It's definitely since the wedding, which was in January. But I talked to them to get their perspective, and people have been reaching out to me for my perspective a lot, which is totally fine. And I know that a lot of people were saying, don't ask the black people that you know how they feel right now because they're having a hard time, blah, blah, blah. And when everything like happened, like I took time away from media. Like I took time to get my mind right so that if people wanted to hear a perspective, that I would be in a good place where I'd be able to share it. So I've been doing that a lot. Professionally, I'm always trying to keep my game sharp. So I'm always looking at post-production videos for like tips and tricks and techniques that I don't know or things that I don't know super well so that I can like be good enough at them to teach them. I do daily, 3 times a week, I'm part of this like photography group where we do like Zoom meetings. I'm in a lot of these. I'm on screen quite a bit. So I've gotten used to that, where I hated it for a long time, but I've gotten very used to it. And yeah, just trying to keep the house in order and keep Lindsay fed and happy. And trying to patronize every brewery in the neighborhood so that none of them close down. That's what I've been up to.
Nice. Excellent. Nicholas, welcome in. How's it going?
What's How up? You doing?
What's All up? Right.
I haven't seen 4 of you in forever.
Hey,
oh
man.
My God.
Hey.
Nicholas, look at that hair, dude. That hair.
I've never seen you with hair like that, man.
I've decided not to grow it until I go back to work. So,
yeah.
It's been a while.
Dope, man. I like it.
Well, welcome in. We're glad to have you.
Is Vegas opening back up?
So kind of. And the answer, it never really closed down, to be honest. Like the casinos are starting to open back up, and the shows aren't going to open back up for a good while. But the as far as lockdown really goes, it didn't really happen here. Not nearly to the effect that like a lot it did in a lot of other cities. But it's good to see that there are people coming back, but it's also really kind of disturbing because I was just in a casino this morning, and you know, I would venture to say that like 4 out of 6 people I saw weren't wearing masks. And it's kind of anxiety inducing to be in somewhere like that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy because everyone pushed to open up, and then we opened up, and then George Floyd, and then there's protests everywhere. So everyone's like, oh, these protests, there's people everywhere. It's fine. Everything's fine. We don't need masks anymore. And it's like, you're looking at these protesters, they're all wearing masks. It's like, you still need to wear a mask out there, guys. It's still, we're still in the midst of the world ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been going to marches here in town, and you know, it's interesting because the ones that we're having now, you know, most of the people I've seen are all wearing masks. You know, my sister was just in San Francisco at Mission Dolores, and she's 16,000 people, and she probably saw 6 people not wearing masks. Yet a couple of weeks ago, when people were protesting for haircuts, practically nobody was wearing one. So it's like very clear that people are protesting for entirely different reasons.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh man. So how's everyone dealing with the events that transpired? Who wants to start with that one? Cause man, oh man, I've heard people ask like, why are we protesting now? Why didn't we protest before? And it's like, well, people have been protesting this since forever, but this just happened to be a very traumatic video, and it went crazy viral, and every single person saw it, and they just watched somebody get murdered, and everyone's like, you know what? We're tired of this. So that's why people are out there doing it right now. I was in shock when I saw that video. Like, I've seen the videos before, but this one was different for sure.
Yeah, this is going to sound really weird. So we did this exact same thing. Not this exact same thing, because it wasn't for a podcast, but we're talking with a friend of ours who was going to come into town. Lindsay's financial planner, but a longtime friend of ours as well. And so we did a Zoom call with her. She ended up not coming down, and we're talking about it. And this was the Saturday after, because Tuesday was when I saw that video, and then I saw the video of Amy Cooper in Central Park, and I watched them both back to back. So that was when I was just like out of commission for a few days. And they were talking there, Lindsay and our friend, they were talking about it and how horrific that was, and which is absolutely true. It absolutely was. And I'm sitting there thinking, and I'm like, you know, that's not what like got to me, because like I've been really time mob brutality, not obviously not quite in video just like that, but the horrific imagery I haven't seen for a very long time, and hearing the stories for a very long time. And so it wasn't quite as shocking to me. What was shocking to me was watching Amy Cooper wield Christian Cooper's blackness against him in Central Park. That was shocking to me, because that part I'd never seen before. I'd never seen anything like that happen before. And especially the way that when she's on the phone, and before when she's just talking to him, to when she's talking to cops, and like the difference in tone and all that stuff. And I'm just like, that's what really blew me away and threw me for a loop. And so the combination of the two together was a lot for me. It was a lot.
So I'm trying to check my timeline, and I really wanted to try to get a timeline, so you can kind of over the past week and a half, 2-3 weeks, to kind of get a sense of, you know, kind of where do we got to today. Mm-hmm. Do you remember if Amy Cooper, that news broke before George Floyd, that news, particular news, and also the Ahmaud Arbery was before that.
The week before that, yeah.
And I was just trying to put like kind of a timeline together of things that happened. So there was Armand Arbery, I think, was kind of like a big one that was in the news. Mm-hmm. And so was it about a week later that the Amy Cooper one was, or so? Mm-hmm. Like when I just searched on Google, like that date came up as May 26th, about her being fired from her job. So I know that it happened a little bit before that, and it probably gotten viral before that. And then George Floyd happened, and I was notified from it because someone posted a picture of, you're okay with this kneeling, but not this kneeling. And it was a picture of Colin Kaepernick, transposed with the cop. And I was like, what's this? Like, what is this? And they're like, this was last night in Minneapolis. And then of course it all blew up after that. Mm-hmm. But man alive, the series of events to kind of like put it all together to kind of, I don't know, inspire such a good I call it a good reaction from folks, a worthwhile reaction. Yeah. It's a trip. The timing of it, we know that these things happen all the time. Of course, 92 in LA with Rodney King only happened because somebody recorded it. And then when they recorded it, and then all of a sudden, there was an assumption back then that since they recorded kind of cops in the act, that of course we're going to finally see justice for this type of behavior. And there was zero justice for that type of behavior. And almost it was reinforced by the establishment that of course you can get away with that, and of course it's fine. And that was definitely the driving force behind the 92 riots. Yeah. And I'm trying to put all the things together to where we got today, which is a very refreshing place where considering compared to times in the past where folks just are speaking up. And I've cried so much over the last like several weeks, like so much, but every single time it was not about the injustice, because I feel like I've been shouting about that forever. And like, and Rich, hate to lean on you, but, the lean idea away. As a black person, you're essentially an activist your entire life, not even by choice. And if you don't choose to kind of be an activist, you almost choose to be, supportive of the status quo. What's refreshing is that the white community, who has through their silence been a supporter of the status quo, is not supporting the status quo anymore, and they have on a very large scale realized that it's not enough to not be racist. You have to actively be anti-racist in order to flush it out and to deal with it in a way. And so many people have been doing it. Extraordinarily moving. And so I can go on forever, but I want to let someone else talk.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Keep it going.
let me put a little more personal perspective kind of in the whole thing. And I really feel that like, through these last few weeks, I don't know about all you guys, but there's been a lot of talks, a lot of conversations, a lot of personal ones, a lot of public ones through comments and such like that. But there's been an awful lot of talking and conversation, which I think is always a good thing. But personally, my reflection on it is that when my parents got married, my mother's family, there were several members of my mother's family who disowned my mother and was very much against that love, that love of a white person with a black person. They were against it and not supportive of it. So much so that my mother's two brothers at the time in the 60s thought it would be a good idea for the two of them to go to Corvallis, where my dad was the campus minister at Oregon State, and convince my dad that this was a bad idea. And I'm air quoting if you don't see me, but
sure, yeah, yeah.
To convince my dad that was a bad idea. That's a real history. This last week, I saw the grandchildren of both of those, the children and grandchildren of both of those brothers, so all my cousins on my mom's side, out marching, and out wearing Black Lives Matter stuff, and out like at their local protests, and out at their local march. And for folks who've been kind of sitting by, I'm assuming, Rich, you can probably appreciate, and probably everybody can appreciate it, that like for folks that have been kind of sitting by and inevitably you've been blowing your horn for the last lifetime, however long your life is, and you know that no one else is listening to your horn anymore, no one knew, that like this is refreshing to see other folks who don't have the same experiences as African Americans in America. They don't have that same experience, but they're expressing outwardly and loudly their support for the cause. And it's been, and that's what's been the most moving to me. And so seeing them do that personally, I could like tie a, you know, make a really nice line from where we used to be to where we are, in just this, in this one generation. And, my moments of breaking down and being overwhelmed have always been because of the love and not because of the hate. So it's been great. Like it's been great. And that sounds so weird to kind of like celebrate the injustice and death, which I'm not doing, but I'm celebrating the finally the action that
impact that's had.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. And so. So with that, I will cede the.
I yield my time.
I yield my time.
Did anybody see that video, by the way?
Yeah.
Fuck no.
You.
Oh yes.
It was on the John Oliver.
Yes.
That was like the best laugh that I had had in weeks. By the time I saw that, I was floored. It was great.
What was that?
Who haven't seen it? It was It was like a like an open forum. They're calling in to talk to like the it was a Zoom call, wasn't it?
The chief of police with LA.
Yes, the LA mayor chief of police.
Rossetti.
Yes, the mayor.
Like, it was basically an open town hall on Zoom, and this dude just went off.
Like went off. It was like fuck you. I yield my time. I'm like, and that he even had the presence of mind to be like, I yield my time, and still like in the format. Oh, that's what got to me. And it's that level of passion and fervor in people, both Black and non-Black, over the past few weeks that have honestly kept me going, is that people are fed up. They're fed up because it's nonsense. It's just such nonsense, and we're sick of it. And like me personally, and I've been, and Matt mentioned this before we started recording, that I've been like taking pictures and like pairing them with like personal stories of things that have happened to me and like my perspective and my experience, just to, you know, hey, you want to know? So here it is. And there are more coming down the pipe, believe you me.
Nice.
But it's been to see so many people so eagerly listening and wanting to broaden their own horizons, and not just broaden their own horizons, but know what it is that they can do in order to affect change in a positive way. I got to echo you on that, BJ. It's been incredibly heartening. It definitely made me feel, it's helped me process, you know, just the latest round of atrocities, because there's just no better word for it than that for me.
Here's the thing. I'm curious to get your guys' perspective on whether or not you think the COVID-19 lockdown had as much of an impact that I think it had on spurring the amount of call to action, I guess, that has happened from this, because everyone has been locked at home, watching everything, staring at everything, staring at their phones, watching Facebook, watching this. So they keep seeing this and this and this. They're getting agitated because they're sitting in their house. Like, they're not allowed to do anything. And then like this happened, then this happened, then Breonna Taylor, then this, and all these things keep happening back to back to back to back to back. And they're just sitting at their computers, staring at it and watching it happen. Mm-hmm. So how much do you think the lockdown kicked in the call to action? Because this has been going on forever, like we all know. And so why now has it spurred so much response? And I think it's great that people can't say millennials aren't good for anything anymore.
<'Cause>, 100%.
Because they're the ones out there, like they're out doing it, like, and so, and I think maybe
I think that's had a huge effect.
And they have the time because they're not working, they're not going to school, and so they have the time to just go out and say what's up. So, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Not to get too like hippy dippy, and you know, like reading into it, but I can't help but read into all kinds of events like this that that I feel like that there was very possibly, if you're thinking in spiritual terms, very possibly a very real order to all these events that have happened, that our time to stay at home and not work and has inevitably been very introspective and made a lot of folks kind of sit with themselves for a while. And they, so folks have been sitting for them with themselves for a while, for how long? For 2 months before George Floyd and before all that kind of went down. Yeah. So they had a little bit of time to kind of get real with themselves. And so I do believe that in some capacity, in some way that I will never understand, you know, because, you know, who's to say the ways of the universe, but that these events kind of have happened and allowed. And I think, I think to your question, Jared, I think that yes, they've had a huge effect on it, because we've all had an opportunity to not be distracted by lots of other stuff, like our daily grind and our work and others. People have been had an opportunity to like think about this. And if you sit and think about it, the inevitable answer and the inevitable reaction is, this is bullshit and I need to do something. So so I think that this COVID that's killed 100,000 plus people in this instance has been a very good thing for the cause. So whatever that means, you know, not to be insensitive to the folks who of course are dying from a disease, not to take away from our efforts as a culture to kind of overcome something. And being an optimist and looking on the positive side, I've looked at the whole COVID-19 experience as something that could possibly be extraordinarily that we are going to come together. Ugliness of racism kind of appears, not appears, but at least makes itself even more evident. And people are ready to act on it. And people are ready to take that same sense of unity to move toward something better, to tackle systemic racism and racism in general. And I think one of the isolation and introspection of the COVID response definitely has fed into the response of anti-racism, I think. So,
no, that's a really good point. I didn't think about it that way, but yeah, the fact that we had all this lockdown and then the government kind of failed us at almost every single level in regards to the response to this epidemic. So it kind of forced communities to come together because they really had no other option. So that happening first might have been a very nice stepping stone to what's happening now, as far as people are realizing, hey, we don't exist in bubbles. right? This isn't about me. This isn't about you. It's about us, all of us together. You know, seeing the kinds of change that we can affect simply by unifying instead of looking at everyone and going, well, no, you got to take care of your own. You get yours, I got to get mine.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like a lot of that right now isn't happening. So it's been really interesting and really, really kind of enervating to see that, especially out in the streets when you're looking at people and they're having conversations. And when you listen to them and you talk to these people, you realize that in any other circumstance, these people would not be talking to each other. Right. Right. They have very few issues in common that they care about, except for this one. And everyone's now finding that common ground. So they're going, oh, actually, they're not that bad, you know, or that's something I had thought. That's not something I'd thought about, you know, this particular person or just looking at you walking down the street. I wouldn't have thought you and I were, we got something. We're compatible here. Mm-hmm. So it's been really cool. It's been really, I get what you're saying and not wanting to say, oh, this has been a good thing for like collectively. And yeah, it sounds really like overly simplistic to say that, or it sounds kind of dismissive, but the reality is that is for the greater good. That is true.
I mean, it's been good. I feel like it's been a good thing for most people in my life. They've had time to do things they've wanted to do. They've had time, like my wife got to spend the first 4 months of my kids' life at home. Like that doesn't happen in this country. Like a lot of people got to spend a lot more time with each other, which doesn't happen in this country. And and now people are coming together. I don't know. It's hard to put into words like how it has been positive, but overall, other than the horrific, you know, deaths, it's been positive. It's been a positive thing for most people, which is cool. Other than, you know, not just the deaths, but the unemployment and businesses getting shut down and all this stuff. But for the most part, I feel, yeah, go ahead.
I would offer up that with COVID and with things needing to shut down and us all needing to be able to quickly adapt to sort of new methods and new situations and new ways of conducting ourselves on a daily basis is part of what made people ready to accept that we need to make a real change in this other area as well. Because when you're already in the mindset of being ready to accept new information and being ready to adapt your life to that new information, and then, you know, here we have something that has, yes, been happening for a very long time, and it's been happening the very same way for a very long time to the exact same people for a very long time. But this is information that a lot of people have not been consuming. They just haven't been. And, you know, a great example of this is from many episodes ago when we talked about, you know, the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921. I bet you're right. And how so many people are learning about that from Watchmen. Mm-hmm. Like they just didn't know that was a thing that happened, and they're learning about it from a TV show. And I'm still seeing that like today, like literally today on people on Instagram. Like I watched Watchmen and they're talking about this thing and I had to look it up because it was a real thing that happened. And they didn't, and people like are deep diving into this history because it just wasn't something that was at the forefront of their minds for a very long time because they weren't looking for this new information. But now that we have to be, you know, basically head on a swivel at all times to know what it is that we have to do to survive in this pandemic, we're ready to accept new information a little bit more quickly, I think.
And people are more willing to look things up because they have the time to do the research to look things up. So maybe they learn about it from Watchmen, but then they're like, what's this all about? Or Matt and I know we just both watched 13th
yes.
on Netflix. And I didn't even know that had been out for 4 years or whatever it was, 4 years ago that it came out. No idea. Yep. I'm sure it got mentioned and like it just went by the wayside because I'm a white guy and like it doesn't show up in my Netflix feed. But it...
Racist algorithms.
It's true. Like...
I mean...
I'm very curious. Sorry. I was just going to say to Jared and Matt, I'm very curious to what your takes are on 13th.
Well, for me, like, one of the things that I've kind of been doing since my wife and I have talked about it, we kind of wanted to get out and march and protest and all that, but because of the fact that she's pregnant with twins and all that, I mean, that's just like a huge risk. So we thought, you know, if there wasn't, you know, COVID around if, you know, she wasn't pregnant, absolutely. But it just pushed us to do more, I guess, what other ways can we support? So where can we give, and where can we write letters, or what cool movies can we watch right now, which there are a lot of for free. So, but I think like Jared, I was floored. I had no idea that there was a loophole in the 13th Amendment where you could just go, here's some slave labor for free, except we won't call them slaves. We'll just call them prisoners. And it goes way beyond like hammering license plates. Oh, that's what criminals do. They just hammer license plates together. And it's like, no, they actually make rockets. That's ridiculous. Or the fact that, like, when they're talking about a lot of people don't go to trial, you can just get picked up off the street and go, all right, well, you can have a trial. If you lose, you get 15 years. And if you just stick around here, you get 3. And it's just say that you did it. And it's like, what? How is this a thing?
Yeah. Well, and so to piggyback on that, the criminal justice system is whack enough as it is. We've learned that from other documentaries like Making a Murderer, where you're like, what the hell is happening right now? There's all sorts of documentaries that show that the criminal justice system is whack and unfair. But then you add on the fact, if you're a black guy, like, how much more whack and unfair it can be. Like, I went through I'm still going through this nonsense of a hit and run thing that I did while I was at work. And I still went through the whole nonsense of, I'm still going through the nonsense of that. And like, I'm an upstanding white male man. Like, I can only imagine how it would be if I wasn't who I am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and Matt made a joke about a racist algorithm, but the fact is that they exist. Because, you know, in a lot of states, what they're doing for sentencing is that they're using AI. They're using AI to determine what sentences are. Mm-hmm. And it's only as good as the data it's being fed. And if the data it's being fed says that people of color are more likely for a higher recidivism rate, then they are sentenced to much harsher terms than non-white people, or the non-black people, for the same crime, mm-hmm. with the same circumstances in every other way. The only difference was their race and a little check mark that was fed to that algorithm in some office somewhere. And it allows judges and it allows prosecutors to get out of it and say, look, we're not racist. All we did was feed this information into a computer, and the computer made that information. So it made that declaration. And all I got to say is, it's not on us, because we can't be racist. We gave it to a computer. And you're like, but you got to think deeper. Deeper and deeper how that goes. And you're like, well, okay, fine, where did that data come from? Well, it came from the prison system. You know, how many years now has that prison system been that way? It's insane the way people can just kind of wave away any kind of systemic racism and say, no, that's not happening, it's not true, or come on, you're making that up. You want to see racism, so that's why you're telling me it's racist.
Yeah.
Well, it's the ignorance is bliss problem, mm-hmm. where I don't see it, so I don't know. So I'm a good person, so everything's fine.
Right.
Right.
I think to kind of piggyback on that, I was just talking about this, and it's kind of course, you know, there's been so many conversations over the last few weeks But a friend of mine posted how when they were growing up, and he was roughly my age, give or take 15 years or so, that when they were coming up, they were taught to not see color. And the idea is like to not see color with the idea that, like, because everybody is equal and everybody is so I honestly believe that that is, take it easy, Nick, take it easy.
It just makes me so mad.
I honestly believe that that is a good intention. It's a good, that the intention is good for that. Yes. That like people had said that, you know what, racism is wrong and I want to protect you from it. So we're going to not talk about racism and ignore it like your annoying brother who keeps trying to irritate you and annoy you, you know, or somebody at school who's bugging you, you know, the advice is always, you know, if you ignore them, they'll go away. And I think that's the attitude that a whole generation or two of folks have taken. If you ignore racism, it'll go away, but it won't. It won't. we need to more nuance in dealing with it than just ignoring it.
I'm going to piggyback on that because I've heard that from a number of people this week who have, and you know, I know there are a lot of people out there right now who are watching the goings on and who are examining themselves, which is great. Like, that is great. And a lot of them are saying, well, you know, maybe not so much going as far as saying, well, I'm not racist, because, you know, if you have to say I'm not racist, then
There's usually a but.
But there are people who are out there who are thinking that, much like what BJ is saying, that, oh, all throughout my life, I've tried not to see people's color, not to see this, not to see that, not to see these factors, and to just treat people as people, which is well-intentioned. Richard Lawrence is in the house. How much episode Richard Lawrence can talk.
No, go ahead.
But
finish your thought.
It does come from a well-intentioned place, but it's not like advertising. Like, ignoring the problem doesn't make the problem go away when the problem is built into the system. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to actively dismantle those measures and these statutes and these laws that make this work the way that it works. It's not going to just go away because we all, you know, even if we all do all have a change of heart and change of mind and we all want to come together and be one people, like, that's not going to make the procedures in the system go away. We have to fix that. Like, right. We have to actively change it.
Yeah.
Well,
Go ahead.
I just listened to Dax Shepard had Ibram Kendi. He wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist. He wrote that book and many other books. Mm-hmm. He was just on their show. And he's saying that part of the issue is the branding, if you will, of the word racist or racism, mm-hmm. where it's like everyone constantly is having racist thoughts or racism pumped through them. They're unaware of it. So you can say, like, I'm not racist because, you know, I don't see color and blah blah. You can say all these things that you've been taught to believe and say and think, but then by not doing anything or by turning the other cheek or by not saying anything, you're kind of, so that's why the whole idea of anti-racism is catching waves and you know, picking up steam, because just saying I'm not racist, that's not good enough anymore,
isn't it?
I mean, it never was in the first place, but
right.
Anyway,
but you're right that's something that we're kind of realizing right now in large numbers, is that just being personally not being a racist is better than personally being a racist, but it's not doing enough to get rid of racism. That, like, you actively have to be vocally and actively anti-racist in order to help solve it. So,
right. Richard.
Hey.
Deja vu, right?
Yeah, you got
good
it.
Evening, sir. How are you?
Good to be with you. You know, speaking of activism, I think it's absolutely right. You know, democracy as a political structure requires we get up on our feet, we're prepared to march, we're prepared to stand up, we're prepared to dispute, we're prepared to argue, we're prepared to admit that there are some of us who are perfectly capable of doing really good things. Mm-hmm. And there are some of us who are perfectly capable, actually, I think it's all of us, to do perfectly awful things. And we have done some awful things in this country, including hide the facts of what we have done from each other, so that we really do think we are God's gift to the world. The United States is not God's gift to the world. The United States committed some horrendous crimes against Black people in this country, and then institutionalized it with a program of discrimination. That discrimination meant we did not then have the chance that others had to get the opportunity realized. And that discrimination supported a notion that that then means those Black folks in this country are really backward. They're really behind. They're really ignorant. They really don't know what we know as whites. And so we got to be careful. We got to defend ourselves. You know, and that defense comes down to the very closest of relationships. White folks get really scared when Black folks start dating their daughters. They get really scared.
Well, I don't know anything about that.
You know,
my entire teenage life is that.
Right.
But yes, keep going.
Well, and the point is, you know, we have just decided as a nation that we're going to commit the worst kind of inhuman treatment possible to a group of people who didn't ask to come here, who came here against their better judgment in slave ships to provide free labor to our southern economy in particular. We then ended up thinking, oh, well, then this must be a southern problem. Well, I'll tell you now, it's not a southern problem. It's a problem that has infected everybody in the country. It infected me as a really light-skinned African-American who everybody said, thinking they were paying me a compliment, you're not Negro. Well, I am Negro.
What? Golly.
You know, and it is not a compliment to tell me that I am not really who I know I am. And who I know, by the way, by 14 brothers and sisters who are all same as me, light, dark, in between, and never doubting that we were Black, and never fearing actually that we were Black, because we grew up in a little hole in Massachusetts called Ballardvale, part of Andover. Andover, lest you think otherwise, was the town where...
Sorry guys, I was hoping to show the family portrait, but it didn't come out right.
No, we could see it.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, those are the 14 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
You know, and my mother had each and every one of us one at a time. I don't know if she's trying to torture herself or not. But I'm just grateful as number 10, she didn't decide to stop at number 9. So anyway, you know, it's a family affair. Believe it or not, it's a family affair. You know, we are now a country where Black and white, browns and others, live in the very same place. And we see each other. We come to know each other. We come to like each other. And some come to hate each other. And one of these days, that last option is going to be erased. There is no justification for anybody's hating a group of people. There may be justification for hating one of them because they do something, you know, that is hateful. But a whole group of people, come on, let's get over it.
Yeah, it's unreasonable.
So right now and forever, it's been, you know, the whites versus blacks is the main topic of the racism and everything. But I mean, lest us not forget the Asian communities, the Latino communities, like,
no,
like it's the same thing. So I'm just curious if you think that because the Black Lives Matter is on the forefront of the minds of everybody, if the other people of color are gonna take a back seat, or do you think that the black versus white, or white versus black, or however you want to word it, has been the issue for longer, that you think that once that kind of evens out, if the whole thing's going to even out, or you think all of a sudden, if you're wearing a hijab, you're going to get, you know, the black guy treatment now?
Can I take this a little bit first, and then Dad, if you want to say something,
pass the ball down.
Yeah, that, you know, our current president, and other folks will say that during an economy that that a rising tide will raise all ships. So the idea is that they're doing great for the black community because the economy is great, and so therefore the percentage of black employment is doing better, and that's what they're doing great for the black community. I think that more appropriately, that a rising tide of justice will benefit everybody. So when we're talking about a rising tide of justice for
literally what I was gonna say.
Great minds, great minds.
I yield my time.
So I feel that, like, as far in terms of like the Asian community, which Nick, please feel free to give your perspective on it. But like the Asian community, or the gay community, or the transgender community, or any community that's been marginalized for whatever reason, that a rising tide of justice will positively affect all of these groups. And so hopefully that there won't be necessarily some kind of ignoring of any particular groups, but at the same time that there won't be any hijacking of it for a particular group at the cost of another group. And so hopefully that all groups can work together on that saying, by ridding injustice, we are helping everybody. And that's all I have to say for that right now.
Preach it.
You know,
anybody else? No?
There's a fact of matter that just we need to keep in mind as to why there is such vivid attention at the moment on Black Lives Matter. You know, there are thousands of blacks who have been shot and otherwise killed on the streets of this country. I went to jail in Chicago in 1965, 55 years ago, because a white police officer shot and killed a former sparring partner of Joe Lewis, who was a really threatening human being. He was big, he was tall, he was strong, and he was mad. He'd been stopped on a traffic violation. What kind of cop gets a merit badge for shooting somebody when they're trying to give a traffic ticket? You know, the very nature of it is just absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. And in those days in Chicago, nobody was disgusted. Everybody expected more or less that that's what's going to happen, and accepted it and didn't see how they could change it. And so it's been 55 years since I've waited for a gathering of folks who are saying, with what is to me incredibly believably, that we are going to stay on the case for justice for blacks for as long as it takes to get it. In the meantime, it is undoubtedly true that attached to the civil rights movement, which was fundamentally for, at the time, largely for Black voters, women, gays, and others mm-hmm. hooked their train to that engine and rode the car to freedom. You know, it's, and God bless every one of them who did. This isn't for anybody in particular. Justice is a gift that we give each other. It's a extension of love. We can't talk about love though, because you know, you don't want Black folks loving white folks. That's just not healthy. But we can talk about justice. And justice is what we are after. And if anybody doesn't benefit, it's because somebody hasn't paid enough attention to some particular action that folks are doing against those folks in particular. In the city of San Diego, it's absolutely ridiculous to me that we can hire Mexicans, bring them across the border, put them in cheap jobs, and then we send them home back across the border at night. We don't want to live with them. We don't want them living with us. And so when we had a chance to vote for public housing in San Diego, we said no. Well, why do you think we said no? We did not want to create housing that was affordable to those folks from Mexico. There is a small Black population in this town, and I can tell you right now, the thought at the time was secondary as far as the Black population was concerned. The primary target was Mexicans. So yes, there is a battle for justice. And yes, right now I'm glad to say Blacks are getting attention. I'm also glad to say that you can't advance the cause of justice without doing something good for everybody.
Mm. I'm so glad you're here.
Were you a preacher?
You know, they like to call me a preacher, but the fact of the matter is, I don't like preaching, although that sounded like one.
Oh my God.
It's funnier because it happened out of frame.
Question.
Go for it, Jared.
Rich, you had already, you had just posted this, where you're seeing normalcy again, where, you know, for the first 6 days, people were posting and sharing and this and then all this stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like, here's a selfie of me eating my steak in the backyard.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we try to get back some sense of normalcy?
Absolutely.
While still sharing, reading, liking, spreading.
I'm going to say yes and no, because obviously normalcy was not working for everybody.
Thank you.
But I will say that the spirit of that post was, even though that you're seeing people posting these things and going back to quote unquote normal, do right. not feel like you have, like we have, like we're done, like we have stopped.
We
like
did it. Over.
Yeah, we solved racism. Like, no, just because I took a picture of a taco doesn't mean that I'm done talking about this. Like, I'm going to keep going. I feel that, and I feel like I've said this because I did this myself from the beginning, that first and foremost, you need to protect your mental health.
Yes.
And you need to protect the people that are close to you.
Yeah.
So if you are someone who has small children, if you have a family, if you have a spouse, if you have a roommate, if you have a dog, if you have cats, I see the cat in the background there, Nick. You need to protect the people close to you, and you need to be in a frame of mind and in a headspace that is healthy before you engage in stuff like this, because it is exhausting. It is talking about justice and promoting justice is almost as exhausting as being Black itself can be.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It comes real damn close. So I have no problem with people needing to find a normal for themselves. Absolutely not. But I just don't want them to forget. That's it. Just don't forget. Don't forget. You know, if lockdown ends and suddenly everything's open and we go back to, you know, a normal, don't forget that there are still people out there who walk the streets who wonder if they'll come across the wrong person who's going to think that they're dangerous because they fit the description.
Because they're jogging.
Because they're out jogging, something I do almost every day now. So, and it's a chilling thought, right? To think that, for me personally, it's a chilling thought to think that that could be me. And I'm not going to front. I don't worry about myself like at that level every single day. I couldn't. I don't have the energy to worry about myself that much. What really gets me is that this is a thing that people see is happening. You know, as much as it happens all over this country in so many different circumstances, it's always, well, they're individuals. It's just an individual instance. And it's, you know, at what point, like, when will it have happened enough that we understand that this is something that is inside, right? That is not just inside each individual, but that is a part of our culture. The way that we view other people is a part of this culture. And we're not going to fix that by taking pictures of tacos, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do that too. Like, we have to enjoy life. We have to find joy in life where we can. If Black people found no joy in life, we wouldn't have survived the Middle Passage. We wouldn't have survived slavery. We wouldn't have survived Jim Crow. We wouldn't have survived redlining. We wouldn't have survived any of this. So you have to find joy where you can. It's incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we always tell you guys to come to church.
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't go over. I'm sorry.
No. If for those who find joy in church, go to church. Praise the Lord. Like, you have to find joy wherever you can find it. If you find joy playing Octopath Traveler, Matt, have you beaten that yet?
I have not.
Oh, man. No. But you got to find it wherever you can. Like, how are you supposed to live? Don't live in a constant state of fear and anger and rage.
Absolutely. That's great.
Sorry.
Little robot Jared.
He's unmuted himself for a minute. Cool. Dang, I don't have anything to say. I was kind of curious to hear from Nick as far as like. Other causes, not necessarily like you march for a Filipino cause or now I'm racist. Are you, you're Filipino? Yes, BJ. Okay. Yeah. You got that one right. So
BJ, okay, you're going, but you're good. BJ, you're supposed to ask, what are you?
Exactly. What kind of Asian am I?
Like, originally.
That's right. I mean, look.
Oh, man.
I'm a little unique because, like, I grew up, I spent a lot of time in San Diego. And, you know, where I lived in San Diego, we were literally, the house I grew up in San Diego is 5 minutes on foot from the Mexican border, right? So when I grew up in a Mexican neighborhood. If you were in my zip code, you were either Mexican or you were my dad. Like, so I went to school with Mexicans and Mexican Americans and you know, everybody called me, like, you know, I was Chino. I was just Chino. Like, they didn't know what my real name was, right? But I spoke just as much Spanish as they did, and I hung out. We all had the same kinds of frame of reference. We all listened to the same music, ate the same food. You know, we all went to church together and everything. We did everything together. So it's unique to see, like, at least from my perspective, as a member of the Asian community, as a member of the gay community, It was unique to be able to experience that, because I do know there are a lot of Asians and a lot of other Filipinos in San Diego who didn't grow up like that, you know, who didn't grow up. Maybe they grew up in National City, but if you grew up in Mira Mesa, you probably didn't see another Latino person anywhere near your house, generally speaking, right? And that's a little different now, but they, you know, I talk to people who grew up in Mira Mesa and they have completely different experiences from me. And they're like, I don't know how you did that. Like, well, I don't know how you how you did that, and I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, and then I would see, like, especially going back to recently, like, I go to talking about COVID-19 and things, and I read a tweet, was from Tomi Lahren, and she said, you know, gay people better not be, because Pride was coming up, and she's like, gay people better not be upset that Pride parades have been canceled. I'm like, you got to remember that the first Pride parade was a riot. Okay, the very reason we have Pride parades was a riot. And not only that, but we're used to being completely ignored by a government when there is a viral pandemic going through a community. The AIDS crisis, like, hello, like, did she forget? And I'm just like, what do you, like, are you just insanely dumb, or are you just obtuse and you just feel like ignoring this because your privilege won't allow you to see that?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to say that, you know, I've always been down with causes because I've always felt that otherness, you know, and everyone always says that, you know, that I was always too, when I grew up, I was always too Mexican for the Filipino kids, but I was only kind of Mexican for the Mexican kids. And then for the white kids, they had no idea what the hell I was. And they just kind of wanted no part of that. You know, and then we talk about 92, you know, basically Koreatown was abandoned by the LAPD, right? And the protesters were going, they were going that way. They were destroying neighborhoods, heading towards Koreatown, and the Koreans in that neighborhood banded together, and they got on their rooftops, and they defended their community. And so now that all these things are happening in places like Minnesota and all this looting and violence, I'm seeing a resurgence of these, they call themselves the rooftop Koreans in their back. And they're saying, oh, we're militarized, we're ready, we're this, we're that, we've got our AR-15s on the roof and we're wearing our bulletproof armor. And I'm like, you guys need to calm the fuck down. Like, honestly, like, settle it. Because you have, this is completely, it's just completely insane to me to see people of color that are actually fighting against their own cause. Every time I see something like that, I just go, what is going on? You know, people trot out Andy Ngo. People trot out Milo Yiannopoulos because, you know, they're gay, and Andy is gay and Asian. Mm-hmm. So they have the side, so they can't be racist. They can't be homophobic. They have Muslims, they have black people, they have gay people in their crowd. So obviously to call them racist or Islamophobic or homophobic or any other thing, they just go, no, we reject that label because look, we can bring out that, you know, look, we got, you know, Ben Carson, like, here.
We have Candace Owens.
Yeah. Candace Owens. Exactly. And you just
think, dude, you can see your eye roll on the teeny tiny version of your face up there.
You're like, what the hell is going on in this country?
Oh man. Man, oh man. I forgot what it was. Oh. No, go ahead.
So one of the things that I got from watching the 13th was, like, I know people always said, like, oh, you know, Trump is a racist. And I just kind of thought, like, he just, like, I know he says, like, a lot of racist stuff, but he just seems to constantly be saying stupid, moronic, like, horrible, hateful things, like, all the time. So I didn't really think that he was really smart enough to be really deliberate and intentional. That's why I'm like, oh, he's probably not like super strategic or intentional, any of that. And then just like watching the 13th and where it like side by side compared to all the things that he said, all of a sudden I stopped thinking of him as like a dumb idiot who just like spouts hateful things off the top of his head, and realized everything that he's saying is a reference from something else. And it's all seemed like extremely intentional and meticulous. And especially when it has like the side-by-side like comparisons of, or the shots of people on stretchers while he's saying, you know, knock the hell out of them, or they used to be leaving on stretchers and all that, and like referencing like, oh, there once was a time when, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did that slip by? Like, how was I not aware of any of that stuff?
Because you're white.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. Exactly. Because we weren't taught. Because we are taught how history goes, and we're taught one thing, and that's our knowledge. And now, thankfully, there's the internet where we're a lot more connected and we can do a lot more research. But when you're in fourth grade and you learn what the Civil War was, then you learn the North defeated the South and the slaves were freed. Hooray, Union. And that's the end of that. Like,
if you grew up in the North, if you grew up in anywhere other than the South, that is probably, you know. These Confederate flags make me insane. I'm like, oh, it's our heritage. I'm like, I feel like you're being very choosy about which parts of your heritage you want to preserve.
Right. Well, and along that lines, like, Jonathan Sanctor, I wish we had him right now. But anyway, so he posted a thing where it was like, Trump did that, removing the transgender care. He just snaked that through right now. We're like, we're just going to ditch this part of the deal here. And then John Sanctor posted, okay, where's the people saying all lives matter now when, you know, trans people are getting the shit thrown at them? It's like, oh, you don't care about those lives, but you're saying all lives? So it's just interesting when people say all lives, they still pick and choose what all means.
Well, there was no, you know, if that were true, right? Where was the All Lives Matter movement beforehand, before Black Lives Matter, when any number of people were being killed unjustly, I don't know, anywhere in the world for any reason? It didn't exist, did it? Mm. People only started saying that after Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Well, and what's funny is... go ahead.
It's interesting you mentioned transgender people, because in the last 4 days, four Black trans women have been murdered, and no one is talking about it. You know, one of them was found chopped up in a suitcase.
Yeah, dismembered.
But yet it doesn't make the news at all.
Because ew, that's gross.
I don't even understand transgender people. And how they
it doesn't affect you. Just let the people be the people they need to be.
Nope.
That kind of,
I don't even know how to address people yet, and that I'm still trying to navigate how to talk to people with that point of view, because it's I don't get it. I feel sort of that this applies to a lot of our social problems, is that, you know, people that are living in their own bubble have a lot of problems with people who are completely outside of their bubble, who they'll probably never see or meet or live near or interact with in the first place. Not that that's a solution, because it's not, but I have a hard time grasping just why people are so virulent towards transgender people when they've probably never even encountered any.
It's because they don't understand it. Right,
they're always afraid.
And these are people who don't understand that sex and gender are two very different things.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. They blow me away. Blow me away at every turn.
It's always about not understanding. Like the fear stemming from, we fear what we don't know, and that's where it always comes from, and it will always go back to that. I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. It's a weird world. Positive, though. Is everyone positive? Richard, are you positive?
I am very positive, and I'll tell you why. You know, I attended a march in Santee, and it was the first one, and because my granddaughter was involved in helping to organize it, I wanted to be there, and she wanted me to be a speaker. And what I saw, I expected there might be 100 or 200 people there. There were a couple of thousand people there. And, you know, I've marched in a lot of marches And I can tell you that there is good reason to be positive. First of all, they were young. First of all, they were multiracial. First of all, that can't all be first, but anyway, they were also joyful. They weren't moaning and mourning and carrying on like the world was coming to an end, mm-hmm. you know, and they were going home to parents who were going to hear from them that Black Lives Matter. And, you know, just the number and the number there that day and the number of events that have come into reality across the world, my friends, on Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. makes me really positive. You know, this is a youth movement. I'm an old man. I'm getting tired. You know, there's a bunch of young folks who are saying no justice, no peace. I'm out of here. I am out of here. I am
out. Drop that mic. That's right.
His hype man, the tech guy, would have been on the nose with the "I'm out of here" and clicked him off. But he's try one more time.
Your producer's asleep.
All right, now you know there's plenty of reason to be positive. I want you to remember that. You know, a lot of folks think that you can build an audience by being negative, nasty to each other. I don't buy it. We've got young folks out there who are determined that they will not stop yelling. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Boom.
Boom.
Oh, there it is. Nice. Nice.
Love it. Much. Good job, Tony. Much better.
Yes. BJ.
Yes, sir.
I want you to speak to this because you had mentioned it specifically. You mentioned Colbert, you mentioned John Oliver, and how they're doing so much good for the world right now. I want to add in Dave Chappelle because 846 was. So you had said they're doing so much good for the world. Is that just by putting the voice out there? Is it by putting a comedic spin to it? Is it all the above? Like, why do you think they are so important right now?
It's definitely all of the above. And for each one, it's a little bit different. Colbert is definitely, with his humor, allowing, you know, humor is a really effective, method, medium. I think that through humor, and this is why, if you have a good sense of humor, like this is an analogy, that it's just more, it's easier for you to say woo a woman, with if you have a sense of humor, because the best parts of humor are when you are off guard and you are able to have a reaction that you weren't planning on. If someone makes you laugh, it wasn't something you were planning on, like, we're gonna laugh right now. They were humorous in that moment and were able to create a vulnerability. And it is vulnerable to find humor and laugh out loud. And like, there's a vulnerability to it. And that same vulnerability where someone can make you laugh is the same vulnerability where they're gonna be receptive to you. So a lot of times these humorists and late night hosts can use humor to be able to make their audience receptive to something. And Chappelle does that beautifully. Actually, you know, there's a lot of folks that do that really well. So I think that, like, Colbert specifically, his humor about the situation, he's kind of preaching to the choir, I think, for the most part, but he does it so well that it inspires and lifts up the choir, I believe. John Oliver, on the other hand, who's funny, it's his deep dive into the facts of it and kind of releasing it for folks. in a way that is very, very effective and very impressive. Mm-hmm. And so I think lots of different comedians of the day are doing that. And that's where they're really doing like the great, great work of right now. So definitely all of the above, their ability to get folks to be receptive to messages that maybe they wouldn't hear, you know, and also just to make us feel better, almost like they are kind of reinforcing, like sending rations down the line for folks to kind of like, you know, to patch up their wounds and to kind of like re-energize and get the nutrients that they need to kind of keep going. They've been kind of doing that. They've been like lifting up everybody who's out there trying to do the good thing and move in the right direction. And so, yeah, I've been very appreciative of their efforts. And they've reached people that, you know, with things that maybe wouldn't been reached before. I can't tell you how powerful that police episode of John Oliver was. I mean, you saw it, so you know. But like, if you're trying to explain that to someone else, why they should watch it, it's almost like, just watch it, you know, just watch it. It's because, like, a lot like in the movie 13th, but with a lot more humor, they're letting a reality be known and be seen and be hopefully acknowledged by folks who weren't able to acknowledge it in the past. So.
Well, yeah, like John Oliver's and Trevor Noah's were both so good. Like, and it's 20 minutes of like, just watch and listen and just watch this. And then John Oliver's ended with, I don't know the woman's name that gave the very impassioned speech, but good Lord, like I watched her whole thing on Twitter. Like, see, that was the thing. I even like Instagrammed or texted Rich. I was like, why, like in right in the thick of it all. Like I'm just laying in bed at like 1 a.m, like crying. I'm like, I should be asleep. I have to go to work in the morning. Just in bed crying. Like just watching everything that keeps happening, video after 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 video. I'm like, why am I doing this? Oh, right, because I need to. I need to do this right now. But then watching that one lady's video, I watched it late at night, and then having her be tacked on at the end of John Oliver's, just literally, he's like, I can't get this woman's words out of my mind. The very, very end of it, thanks, Tony. Fucking asshole. He texted me, you're crying because you're a little bitch. Anyway. but just the very, very end of her speech when she says, you should be happy, we want equality, not revenge. It's just like so hard hitting and to the point that you're like, yeah, you're right. We should be happy that that's the case.
I was going to add to your question, the fact that we bring up, you know, Colbert and John Oliver, Chappelle, Trevor Noah. Yeah. Comedians are the philosophers of our time. Comedians are the people, like we quite literally gather around these people in order to get their perspective, obviously mostly humorous perspective, but we gather around them to get their perspective on our own life experience. And we pay them money for this, just so that we can hear, I want to hear what you have to say about issue A, issue B. Chappelle has just shown up at comedy nights, gone up unannounced, and just asked for headlines from the crowd and started riffing off of them. But that's quite literally what we do. Like, we seek them out for their philosophy. And it's, I'll echo BJ and I'll echo you on this too. It's awesome. It's so awesome because they have, one, they have a platform. You know, they're obviously they're popular names and they have that platform. They can be biting, they can like tell long drawn out stories, and they can always reach the point effectively, right? Every single time. And especially with that episode of John Oliver, which I'm gonna watch again tonight probably, just the punctuation mark with which they make their point is almost always right on. And that's why they're so effective. That's why we listen to them. And that's why they're more widely popular than any single. Can anyone name a single news anchor, like actual news anchor, that's as popular as any of the names that we just talked about?
Nope.
There are no more Walter Cronkites. There are no more Dan Rathers. Dan Rathers still Dan Rather, but not anymore. Not to the same level.
Like, well, it's also because
we look to more now.
Well, and like Dave Chappelle said in his special, I don't know what you want to call it, but anyway, what he said was like, people are asking me, like, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And he's like, why do you care what I think? And he's like, oh, the reason is because you trust me. Mm-hmm. Because people trusted Walter Cronkite. People trusted Barbara Walters. Like, they trusted them because they were the ones that told you the news. Mm-hmm. And they didn't sugarcoat it. And they were like, this is what's going on. Here's some video. You might not want to see it, but here it is. And so it's hard to find, especially nowadays, somebody on the news that you're like, yes, I believe and trust you.
This person will not lie to me.
Right. And so when it's a comedian and they're telling you in a humorous way, but also straight up, they're like, this is what's going on. I'm not lying. I'm not sugarcoating it. I'm not bullshitting. That's why you want to know what I think. And Dave Chappelle's was so stinking good. Like, so good. And like, he's still Dave Chappelle. Like, he's super, super serious the whole time. Obviously, he's just literally watching. I think AJ Doc Knox said it best, where he's like, this isn't that funny, but it's literally watching a great mind work their way through what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And it, like, that's what it is. He's just up there and he's like, you know, I came out to do this first stand-up show back, and like, I'm not doing stand-up. And like, I mean, the joke that I made was like, my favorite part in the, or the comedian in me says that my favorite part was when he just straight up goes, this shit isn't funny, I know, I'm sorry.
Like, yeah.
it's fantastic. But like, no one cares that it's not funny because he's Dave Chappelle, and like, we know that he's funny, and like, and he just needs to tell us. Mm-hmm. God, and Trevor Noah was so good. And anyway, I just, the exposure and the amount of everything that's going out is fantastic. And I'm glad that now there's a lot more of that showing up. And maybe it's a combination of that's what I'm seeing and I'm not spending so much time on Twitter that make it seem more positive.
You know, Twitter sucks, dude.
God.
What's interesting about all of this too is that, you know, and in the same way people have for a generation or more not wanted to talk about racism with the idea that it will go away or the idea that we don't want to face that reality, that people complained about something being political or not. And well, now you're going to get political and now you're going to lose me. And I'm like, this is all connected. Like, this is all connected. And I appreciated a friend of mine today kind of speaking up and kind of talking about what's going on today and his kind of responsibility as a white middle-aged man to kind of speak out against it. And he's a real smart guy from back in the day. But he spoke about how he had to speak about Trump and say, the reality is that you are, just like you are being complicit in racism by being silent, you are supporting racism in the political arena by being silent and voting for it in a lot of instances. So that, you know, someone put up a sign that said, when you voted for Trump doesn't make you a racist, but it makes it clear that racism isn't a, what did they say? Dang it. It's factor. not a deal breaker.
Yeah,
or not a deal breaker. Yeah, that racism isn't a deal breaker. By voting for Trump, you are agreeing that racism isn't a deal breaker. And that's a real part of this conversation that when you're talking about silver linings to this to these dirty clouds, and we have two dirty clouds of a pandemic and racism, that even though these are filthy, dirty clouds, it's obvious the connection of, are you going to be anti-racist and move our country forward, or are you going to conserve the racist past of the states and fight for that and defend that. And that in large numbers, everybody's agreeing has a unity across the country in big, big numbers. I shouldn't say everybody, but in big, big numbers. A lot of people that are saying, no, we can all gather together and actually rally behind that racism is bad. And that puts you on the opposite side of Trump. And that very real thing, it can be a really great silver lining to this whole terrible shit show, is that, like, in the meantime, we come to our senses and get rid of the megalomaniac, racist, agitating, dividing asshole who's in our White House. And there's nothing better we can do for our country right now than to fucking get rid of this guy, lock, stock, and barrel in big, big numbers. So, yeah. So I am excited about the prospect. I'm excited about the prospect of us moving forward. And I'm confident that our president right now is completely incapable of leading the country in a meaningful steps forward in this arena. And that very thing is going to assist in him being left behind, ideally. You know, at this point, sure. It's going to be so disappointing if it wins again. If hate wins again, it's going to be extraordinarily disappointing. But right now, it looks very good. I was going to say that another positive thing of it is this whole thing has made me proud to be American again. Like, when I see America coming out and reacting like this and marching and speaking out and publicly declaring their allegiance to anti-racism, that's the America that makes me feel part of it and feel proud of it. You know, that makes me super happy and super proud to be American. And I want to fly the fucking stars and stripes when that happens. 'Cause I haven't wanted to do that in a long time. That's for sure. So
nice. Nice. To kind of like also spread some nice shiny light, piggybacking on your positivity, BJ, I've been noticing things like that myself, just kind of like in even my own like kind of like family life, where I'm noticing, you know, my parents who said, you know, who've been just historically Republican, that are like, no, we need to get this guy out of here. We're voting for the first time blue. And I was like, whoa, that was a huge thing for me. And then also just kind of taking note of like little things that are happening where you see like Pat Robertson, who's like the most conservative crazy guy, is condemning Trump. I'm like, what? How did that happen? And then Fox News calling out Trump and saying, we don't work for you, Mr. Trump. I'm like, oh my gosh, like several people on Fox News are condemning Trump, and I was like, whoa, this actually might turn out the way that I want it to now. Like, it gives me hope. It gives me hope. So I don't think it's just a pipe dream.
I don't think so either. As long as it's not solely based on someone who can lead the country, because I don't think Joe Biden's the guy either. I mean, he's the better guy, but
yeah.
I mean if my choices are an undercooked steak and a shit sandwich, I'll take the undercooked steak.
Wait a minute. What? What are the sides that come with the shit sandwich?
a salad with a light drizzling of fascism on top.
Yummy.
Yeah. Goodness.
It's like right now we're drowning in a sewer, and then Joe Biden's a raft. You're not out of You're not out of the shit, but you're like
floating.
You're not in it.
Yeah. Something to grab onto for sure.
It's true. True story. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
All right. So while we're talking about, you know, people are making, they're reversing positions and they're changing things up and all of this, I read something the other day that was really interesting, and I thought it was kind of powerful. It was a quote from somebody, and it said that the woke need to make room for the waking.
Yes.
Like, and I was like, oh, wow. I was like, I've never heard it put that way, but that's true. Because there are so many people now who are, they're coming out and they're speaking out, but there are also people, I've seen this, because I have people in my friend circle on social media and whatever, and they've always been very, like, right-wing conservative. They're starting to speak out about these things. And then, like, the people we have friends in common who are also very left-leaning and progressive, they look at they challenge them, and they go, where were you? Where were you 6 months ago? Where were you 6 years ago? We had an argument 10 years ago about this, and you said the complete opposite thing. And I was like, we need to step back. We need to step back and be mindful and embrace the fact that people are seeing a new paradigm. And not only that, they're not threatened by it. They're not doubling down. They're going with it, right? So I think that's something that a lot of people need to still be aware of. Is that, you know, this is going to be new for a lot of people. So you need to approach your message, and you need to approach that dialogue with them in a very compassionate way, rather than coming towards and go, I told you so, because you don't get anywhere with that.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of that I'm seeing right now from people, and I just needed to vent and get that one off my chest.
Sure. No. Yeah.
Well, and I love.
Go ahead, sorry. AJ. I was going to say that's a great point about the woke need to make room for the waking. And I was just going to real quickly just being awoken from your deep, deep sleep, you're not always as awake as you can be. And so our work isn't done, even as, quote, woke people, you know, that we're not so woke that our work is done. We want to make room for folks who are waking, but at the same time, I'm not surprised if I find out in the future that at this very moment I'm still asleep in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? That we all have a lot to learn and a lot to we still have a long way to go, personally and as a society. So,
well, and the fact that people are actually having conversations is good. Because if you just go on to Twitter or anywhere and you go with the hashtags, it doesn't make any sense. Because hashtag defund the police is the worst hashtag I've ever seen in my life. Because it doesn't convey what actually needs to and should be happening. It sounds, and it's scary. It's like, defund the police? What do you want? No police? You want to get rid of everything? And just, what do you mean defund the police? It doesn't convey anything.
To be clear, some people do want that.
Right.
Some people want abolition.
Some people do want that.
Yeah, which is insane.
Some people
do want that.
I'm not there, but some people do want that, yeah.
I just think it's crazy that that's the hashtag, and it's like that's the problem with a lot of it, that where there's not a dialogue happening, you see the hashtag, and you're like, I don't want that. No, that's bad. That means the opposite of what I want.
And then you just close off.
Right.
Yeah. I've been kind of vocal about that. At the same time, like, I don't want to discredit the messaging of what that means, defund the police. But at the same time, as a political animal, you absolutely need support for whatever your cause is. And if you present your cause in a way that doesn't reflect what it is, then you are selling, you know, ice cream sandwiches, but they're called shit sandwiches, and nobody's going to be receptive to that. You know, you have to be mindful of your messaging and your PR work, how you're producing it. We need support for it. So don't let pride of how we're going to call it keep us from actually getting support we need to get it done. So,
right. Absolutely.
Try to make it as hard for Tommy Lauren to scare people about your hashtag as possible.
hashtag try to keep it as hard as possible for anyway.
Yeah. Hashtag let's put more of our dollars towards social programs and adequate mental health support for those who need it, and then healthcare.
Hashtag
send schools. In the experts
that know what they're doing instead of just the guy with the gun.
Yeah. I had a friend today yesterday, who forwarded me somebody's Twitter. She's like, you should share this, because she's like, people are listening to you right now. And I'm like, cool. And it was the nurses restrain violent, belligerent, scared people all the time. And we don't kill people doing that. And I'm like, because there's a lot of people out there say it can't be done. Only police can handle these things. Only they can handle this. Only they can handle that. And it's like, there are a lot of other things that are very, you know, unpalatable and untoward in our society that people who aren't police are already handling all the time.
Right.
Who already have training that's adequate enough to be handling these problems. But yet we call the cops for too many things. We call the cops for too many things.
Yes. Hey, there's a homeless guy outside my house digging through my trash can. Woo woo. Wait, how come a social worker doesn't show up, or like somebody that runs a homeless shelter, or it's just it's
any crazy. Other option than somebody with a weapon.
Crazy times.
Which actually brings me to a kind of an important question. Do you guys think that Brooklyn Nine-Nine is going to come back?
I was reading about this today because Stephanie, is it Beatrice? I forget how to
pronounce
her last name. But she posted something on her Twitter that was saying, I'm donating. Like, if you play a cop on TV, if you're getting residuals for playing a cop on TV, you better be giving some of your money to some program that's going to help people. And she posted a donation receipt from $11,000 that she donated to some cause.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wow, put people on blast. That's dope. But I don't know. That's a very good question. People don't want to laugh at police right now.
But well, not only that, but they canceled Paw Patrol because Chase is a police dog. It's one of the most popular kid shows on TV, and they canned it because he's a cop dog, which I think is a little too far, maybe?
Yeah.
Just maybe?
I was going to say that, when we were talking about comedians and how effective they are because you get receptive to it, it's very possible that a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because of its comedic presentation, could, offer some insight or a look into this, into a very difficult topic, because they have an audience that loves them, and so we'll see. If I ever watch more of it, which I keep meaning to do, I'm sure that I would agree, because I know I've liked the four episodes that I've watched, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, I also kind of think of Schitt's Creek, where Daniel Levy said that he, as far as homosexuality, he didn't really want it to be a huge kind of crazy topic. He wanted to have people just accept it and be happy with it, not so you could have this, crazy episode of watching people get through big struggles, but being watch these people and how cool they are with it and how happy they are. This is how society should be.
Yeah, it's the normalization of it, which is the way that it should be, is that this is, people are struggling in relationships, because surprise, people who are homosexual or wherever they are on the spectrum struggle with relationships the exact same way that everybody else does. These are human things. It doesn't matter where you land here or there. These are things that we all share and experience together in different ways. Sure. But we do. And the way Schitt's Creek delivers it perfectly, where it's this is who we are, and this is the way that it is. So
hey cops, this is how you should act.
Nick.
Media certainly helps with that. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Ocean's 8. Anyone else didn't see that movie? I thought it was actually really kind of good, but Ocean's 8 had Awkwafina in it, right? And I read an interview with her about the movie, and she was, the interview was asking her, was like, were you concerned at all when you got approached by doing this ensemble film, how you would be portrayed? And she's like, well, I looked at the script and I looked at the character and I talked with the director, and they said, we want you to do this your way. And she did. She made that conscious choice that she is an Asian person in that movie, but she's not doing the stereotypical Asian things, right? She wasn't portrayed as some kind of demure flower or some fierce dragon lady. Yeah. You know, she was a thief. She was a pickpocket, right, in that movie. And she had like such an interesting perspective on it, especially being a person of color in movies and TV. And she thought that that was her. She thought she saw it as her moment to be able to push that narrative forward regarding people of color in media.
Yeah.
Same with Rihanna, right? Rihanna played a hacker in that movie. And I can't recall when I've ever seen, maybe a couple of times, maybe there was a couple of movies or TV shows where like a black person had played someone who was like, you know, into tech and was a hacker and
Die Hard.
A cerebro type character.
Die Hard.
Nice.
Yeah. That far. Like, there's an issue with how they're portrayed, you know, how we're portrayed,
sure,
in media.
True story.
Jared, you're a robot.
One more time, no. Jared.
I'm looking out for you, man.
Jared's like, come on, man. I'm trying. I'm trying to embrace my heart. Don't call me a robot.
Feelings.
Feelings.
Doing my best. Doing my best.
People too, man.
Beep, boop, beep, beep, boop, beep.
Oh, goodness. I hate to cut our conversation short, but it's been going for a while, and I have to go make dinner. So,
dinner time.
I do have one last question that I am just pleading ignorance on, and so black indigenous people of color, why is it now that instead of just people of color?
I have not heard that.
I saw somebody break this down once, so forgive my like very tertiary knowledge on this, but it's because a lot of people were saying people of color, like in reference to what's happening right now, as sort of like being an all-encompassing thing. And somebody, I don't know, not like one person, but maybe it was a group of people of whoever, countered by saying like we have to recognize like the specific exception for black and indigenous people when it comes to things like this, because especially indigenous people have borne the brunt of like the most horrific sort of racism in black people too. That's what I heard. That's the way that I've come to understand the genesis of that term.
A lot of it is a way of making sure that indigenous people are included in the conversation.
That too, yes. Because I mean, obviously. Well,
and I think that there is a point to be made about, yeah, you can be black in America. Like I've been in a conversation with somebody white who's on the fringe, and these are the people that I'm talking to the most these days. I'm not name calling, I'm not like insulting. I don't think I've won a single person over in my entire life doing that. Mm-hmm. Honestly. But that's just a lesson that I needed to learn. But talking to damn it, now I'm gonna lose my train of thought. But
that's a long anyway, name.
There's a very real reality that like blacks who are in America, American blacks almost to a person, are a product of slavery. Our product of the horrific crime of slavery is in their DNA. If you're a black person who grew up, say, in the islands, there's a very real possibility that there's not a history of slavery in your family line. And the black folks from other places, it's not that there isn't racism that they've experienced, but there's a lot to be said for the genetic damage that's done by generations of horror. That's a very real thing, and that I've heard black folks who aren't from America express that very well. That you're like, you know, I don't get it as much as some of the other black personalities, and one of the reasons is that this isn't my history, you know. The woman was saying that my family moved here in the 1900s. You know, why should I feel any guilt about what's happening? And I was trying to explain that, like, it's more in terms of country. If we're going to be a country together and unified, that as a country together and unified, I guarantee you there are thousands and thousands of people who will pridefully point to World War II and to storming the beach of Normandy by almost having a personal hand in our freedom because their family fought for it in Normandy or in World War II or in wherever, in Korea or Vietnam. And that's fine. But if we're going to accept the gratitude and the praise of fighting for freedom that our ancestors did, we also, at the same, as a country, we do that. As a country, as Americans, we say, well, we stormed the beach at Normandy and we turned the tide in World War II. Rah, rah, us. That to do that and to not accept, as Americans, the very real karmic debt that we owe the world as a country, if we don't acknowledge that, then we are never going to move forward in a meaningful way. That we have to, as a country, acknowledge that that we did a very terrible wrong and we need to make it right. And what that looks like, I can't tell you, because I do often think that reparations is an answer. But in lieu of reparations, we absolutely at least need to make evening the battlefield or evening the playing field a reality. And so including our justice system and including our mentality. And then we've been ignoring it for generations, and that's taken us as far as we could go. Go ahead.
And sum that up. If we're going to take generational ownership of anything, we have to take generational ownership of everything.
Right. Yes.
You can't just have A without B. You got to have it all.
Yes. Agreed.
I feel that.
Cool.
Well put, BJ.
Excellent. Nick, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, Nick! I haven't seen you in a billion years. Yeah. New galaxies have been formed since the last time I saw Nick. Years.
It's at least been that long.
That's fantastic, man.
It's been more than 10 years, I think, than we went to the Prince concert. So,
yeah, I paid you for those tickets, so you can stop bringing that up.
I just wanted to remind you that those
I gave
free.
You that money, Beej.
Okay.
All right.
So, it's great to see you, man. Great cool.
to see y'all too.
So. Cool. Well, yeah. This was fun. I mean, it's a weird word to use, but it was like it's fun seeing you guys, and it's fun talking, and yeah, it's good stuff.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yes. Well, thanks, listeners, for listening, and if you're watching, thanks for watching. But for now, let's go ahead and get out of here. This has been Life's a Binge, very special episode. I'm Jared.
I'm BJ.
I am Rich.
I'm Matt.
And we'll see you on the couch.
See you on the couch.
Bye. I'm not playing the theme. I might edit it in, but I'm not playing it.
All right.
Word.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.